Live and Lansing with Michael Cohen. This is More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
And we are back. Michael Cohen with my producer, Desi Simmons. The debt ceiling deal is now behind us. What was really accomplished, though, especially when you consider that the debt will only continue rising for the foreseeable future? To discuss that, I'm joined by Jim Luke, an economics professor at Lansing Community College. Welcome to the program, Jim.
Hi, glad to be here.
So what apparently the result of all this drama was that we've increased the debt ceiling by $2 trillion, and apparently that's going to hold us through the year 2000 or until the year 2013. Does it seem that that leaders in Washington essentially avoided any hard decisions at this point?
Yes, actually, it appears that they tried to avoid as many hard decisions as possible, and at the same time, they tried to set up a situation where they effectively raised the debt ceiling limit, but set up a kind of complex mechanism so that over the next 6 to 12 months, there will be two or three opportunities for Congress people to vote and indicate that they're opposed to the debt actually going up, or they're opposed to certain kinds of spending, when in fact they know that voting against it won't be able to pass. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to make it look like they're opposed, but actually approving it.
And the deal involved cuts, but no revenue increases whatsoever. Is that in fact going to be able to hold, or are we going to have to increase revenues to really begin addressing the debt?
Well, there's two aspects to that. One is the economic or financial side, and the other side is the political side. I think one lesson we can take away from this whole debt ceiling debate of the last month or two, as well as the budget debate last spring, is that the Republicans, particularly the Tea Party end, which control one house or basically one-third of the process here, have basically shown that they've been able to take any form of tax increase or even just any revenue increase in the form of closing a tax loophole off the table. So that's kind of the political side that I think, looking forward to what this super committee is going to do, you kind of have to be skeptical about. The possibility exists that they could recommend various kinds of revenue increases, mm-hmm. but I kind of doubt if it's really going to happen.
The loopholes, is that really going to be the underlying issue when it comes to getting more revenue into the federal government?
I think right now there's going to be two sticking points about getting new revenue into the federal government. One is the loopholes issue, and that's really on the corporate tax side. And I think most Americans and most of the polls we've seen are pretty clearly in favor of closing the loopholes. They've kind of had enough of companies like General Electric paying zero in taxes. But, you know, they're going to be basically up against a lot of corporate lobbyists that are also going to be kind of pushing the opposite direction on that.
Which means it's very unlikely we actually will see effectively closed loopholes.
I think so. We might see a little bit, but not really a lot.
So if we're looking at cuts, I mean, the difficult cuts are clearly going to be in the Medicare and Social Security systems. How do you see that unfolding? I mean, what kind of cuts are going to be required, and what kind of changes will these programs need to undergo?
Well, what you bring up is the issue of whether we have to do cuts. I mean, if we want to get the deficit under control, and with that, getting increases in the debt under control, what history shows us, I mean, what the data indicate over and over again, is that it's not just a question of the tax rates or the spending programs you have, but the biggest issue is what employment is. Is if you're at full employment, if you can get the economy growing and keep it growing without a major recession for 5, 6, 7 years, you get to the point where you don't have to worry about deficits at all. That's what happened under the Clinton administration.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't necessarily that Clinton was a great restraint in spending so much as the fact that And Clinton actually raised taxes at the beginning of his term. But the big success was that we went about 7 to 8 years, about 8 years, mm-hmm. with no recession, and we got to full employment. And so we finished the 1990s now showing a surplus. Now our biggest problem is that we simply have not been able to grow the economy and increase employment, even before we got into the recession, we were having a problem.
I see. Now, I'm talking to Jim Luke, economics professor at Lansing Community College. Apparently, we're out of a recession, but the job market is just going nowhere. Is there any sense that we can actually spur this job market and get to anywhere near the levels we saw in the late 90s?
It's looking very, very hard, very, very hard to do. There's two schools of thought in economics about how you could get out of this. And one school of thought is that you try to basically that you keep the government out of trying to stimulate the economy or do anything to the economy, mm-hmm. and you let the private sector work through it. The catch with that is that the nature of the recession, the crisis we had, is what we call a balance sheet recession, meaning the biggest problem is debt and not government debt. The real big problem drag on the economy is private debt. Mm-hmm. And that's what's keeping things from keeping people from spending.
Well, and that certainly is going to take quite a long time to resolve. I do want to ask you,
right.
You know, Republicans resisted rolling back the Bush tax cut, almost taking us past the deadline to avoid any kind
Correct.
Of increase there. Is that a wise approach, or do we need to roll those tax cuts back?
Well, if you're concerned about the federal deficit and the government debt, we definitely have to roll back those tax cuts. Or basically, it's actually what we need to do is they're scheduled to expire at the end of 2012, and we need to just let them expire. The reality is all of the, actually a lot of the projections that this whole debt ceiling debate was predicated upon was assuming that those tax cuts would be renewed. The reality is if you allow those tax cuts to just expire and go back to the tax rate we had in 2000, actually, much of the deficit problem goes away over the next 10 years.
You know, the agreement, this debt ceiling agreement, also includes a call for both houses of Congress to vote on a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution. Apparently, it's going to be phased in, but is this in any way a realistic structure for the federal government?
I don't think it's a realistic structure at all. Every time in U.S. history that the federal government has moved towards a balanced or actually a surplus in its budget, within a year or two, it's followed by a recession, and some of those have been pretty nasty. And, for example, going all the way back to 1830s, mm-hmm. which was the last time we actually had zero national debt, we paid off the national debt and immediately plunged the economy into a big depression. It's probably not a great way to go. A government needs to have some flexibility to adjust and mm-hmm. to either be in surplus or deficit, and to force the national government to be in the same straitjacket as a state government
would just not work. Yep. Jim Luke, we're out of time. Jim, thank you for joining me. Economics professor at Lansing Community College. You can also catch his blog on econprof with a ph.com. Thank you for joining me, Jim.